Hey, this is Jim McDonald with a quick reminder about iTunes ratings and reviews. We really appreciate those. If you could head on over there, even if you don't use iTunes, listen to the show and leave us a rating and review, because that's real important to us. Also, support our sponsors, CavemanCoffeeCo.com, HowMuchABench.net, ThePowerMagazine.com, and head over to the Super Training. Actually, head to supertraining.tv and look at some of the affiliate programs there. Reebok, Rogue, Caveman Coffee Co. Click through there, and that benefits supertraining.tv, and we appreciate that. Also, check out the store at shop.supertraining.tv, and then let's play the music.
Strap on.
Yeah, strapped in and strapped on.
We should have masseuses that come around and rub our backs.
That'd
like
be really
games.
Nice.
How about rub our fronts?
Well,
let's get the front.
Well, why do you think the underneath of this thing's hollow?
Ah, wait, what?
For Halloween.
Huh? Oh, Fluffy? Yeah, Fluff Girls. Fluffgirls.com. Yeah, new website.
Yeah, we've been to a lot of weird websites lately.
Yeah. Makers of NO Explode. Look for BSN products at alongside Silent Mike and Jim McDee. Here's Coffee host, Strong. Mark Bell.
Here's Mark Bell.
Oh, is that my cue?
That's cue.
God damn, I'm always
start behind. The intro, buddy.
You're always first.
You got the script, Jim?
Script?
Mike?
Nope.
Script?
Nope.
You mean like
I emailed it over
like
here.
Cursive? Mm. Like, I don't can't write like that.
I don't remember. What are we supposed to talk about today?
Absolutely nothing. Probably anything but powerlifting.
Maybe we should talk to these two people that are next to us here. We got Mr. Edward Cohen, the greatest power lifter of all time.
At least
that's what I'm going to call him, and fuck everybody else that doesn't think so. Thank you. We got Haga Nielsen. Mm-hmm. Am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
God, I nailed that. God damn, I'm good.
You're good with words, buddy.
Yeah.
You nailed her name or you nailed her?
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to talk too much about the whole thing that happened at the house and everything. She went to use the washroom.
Yeah. And so did you.
Uh-huh. Hey, now. Things happen. So, I don't know, maybe we should talk about some powerlifting or something. We normally don't do that on the show. Usually we talk about poop. Last time you were on the show, you had the poop story.
That's the poop story of the century.
The definitive poop story.
Yeah, the Play-Doh poop story. Yep. So let's kick it off with kind of how you guys met. Haga, if you can take some of this over.
Her version's probably going to be different than mine.
Yeah, a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know what?
Okay, we can have Rashomon then.
No, you know, Eddie can start and I can fill in.
Okay.
You know, every time he lies.
I was at
every time he lies.
Correct.
Yeah.
I had a boner this big, and she'll be like, wait a second.
It's like the fish that got away.
Yeah.
No, I was in Birmingham, England at the World Championships for the IPF 1 year, and I was doing some seminars there. I wasn't competing. And she came over from Norway to watch the Worlds. And I sat next to her in the audience, and that was kind of it. Later on, she came up for a picture so she could prove to some of her friends that they wanted a picture of them to prove that she was there with me.
Right.
So I sat next to her in the audience one day after that, and I was really, really shy. I never could really talk to many people, especially girls.
Right.
You were good with guys, or?
Hey, Eddie, I like where you're going with all this.
Well, lifters. And I was sitting with Jamie Reeves in the crowd, and Jamie's a big prankster joker, and he can talk to anyone. So he was doing all the talking, and she was look at me and talk, and you'd hear like crickets. There's nothing going on.
It's incredibly boring.
Way to go, Ed. Way to reel him in.
Having Jamie there kind of helped buffer the situation. And, you know, he would tell dirty jokes and everything, and she knew all the punchlines because she grew up around meathead powerlifters her whole life. And I had actually asked her out to dinner, and she was under the assumption that we're going to go with all the guys from the team and stuff, and it was only me that showed up. And I proceeded to ruin her life ever since.
Yeah, how disappointed was that?
Incredibly. incredibly boring dinner, too. And just because
you're fun. Like, I'm going out with the entire American team, and then he shows up.
I wanted to give it a chance because he's so strong.
Right.
So, I was thinking, you know, it's really, really boring, but he's
maybe
so
it could be
strong.
Fun.
Yeah, he's just so strong.
Maybe he'll get more interesting
eventually. Yeah, maybe you can go and lift.
It took a lot of years before that happened.
All right, so then you had dinner, and then you hit it off right away, right?
Yeah, I hit it right away.
And so it also
you hit it off right away.
So it all started with a selfie, though. That's what you're saying, is that you wanted to take
well,
a
they
picture.
Didn't have selfies back then, but
yeah, we're talking
23 years ago. So.
Yeah, I was gonna say, without being a dick, like the internet wasn't that famous and stuff. No. Like, how did you know who he was? Or
I was involved in powerlifting, so everyone in Europe knew who he was.
Just rumors,
she was on
or
the Norwegian national team when she was a teenager.
Yeah, but was it like magazines? Was it? You know, people aren't watching. Okay, there we go.
Muscle and fitness.
Yeah, because there's no video. It's not YouTube. You know, I see your lifts on YouTube. Stuff,
it's pretty. It's pretty amazing. Ed was cracking through to the general public. You know, back way before powerlifting was ever popular, rubbing elbows with guys like Joe Weider and stuff like that.
Yeah, and people don't do that
getting,
now.
Getting into
Mike Lambert
and
Joe
and stuff.
Joe Weider made me famous. Let's just say that.
Yeah, Mike Lambert, powerlifting USA, of course. Yeah.
First time I heard of you was from my basketball coach in high school, which was kind of weird. Yeah. You gave me your book and said, "Hey, you want to get stronger, buddy? Here you go." Because he knew I was into lifting weights, and that was that.
That was the first
time I started powerlifting. Before I was, I guess, bodybuilding, but I was lifting. Mm-hmm. But after that, I started deadlifting and squatting.
You were a bodybuilder?
Yeah, can't you tell?
No.
I got so two more follow-up questions here. Do you still have the photo that you took?
Yes. But
you do?
It's in Norway, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we can't translate it to English.
I don't really want anyone to
know. It's a Norwegian photo.
It's a Norwegian. Yeah, I can't even see it.
Damn it.
I don't want
it's in Norwegian. You have to have Norwegian eyes.
You'll never understand. It's got a bunch of fish on it and stuff.
I don't want anyone here to know that we're dating. I tell everyone he's my gay brother.
Oh.
But in Norway they know.
I pass.
Yeah. When did you find out that he was gay? 1991.
Call me Robert.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay, yeah. Yes. He called you a guy's name.
Yes.
Okay. That, yeah.
He screamed it out.
Yeah.
That's a classic.
He uses the same name with me. That's kind of weird. Yeah, he's got a weird thing.
Yeah, who is
no, you're
Robert?
You're Bobby.
Yeah.
Robert.
There you go.
Bobby Bell.
And the other question was, when you went back home to Norway, what was the story you told people?
Just bragging.
Like, I got a picture for you.
He's incredibly boring, but he's so strong.
Wait till you see him deadlift.
Yeah.
What else does he do?
Yeah.
Nothing.
No.
What, is he doing anything else?
Have you seen that guy squat?
Did you guys get along good? I don't know. Did he have a good time? I'm not sure.
But he's strong.
Did you see the size of those hands?
Yeah. And feet.
Yes.
And
incredibly large feet.
And that's kind of why I was still interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew what was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Damn, something's coming.
Yeah.
Yes.
Rumors.
How big are those?
Pretty fast, but.
How big are those feet, Edward?
It all depends what you, with
12 inches?
Yep.
Like with
on the internet, anything's possible.
With Nikes, it's size 12.
Size 12 foot, and you're like
five and a half, maybe
five and a half or so, 5'6".
And
did the weights push you down over the years?
I'm pretty sure they did.
All the heavy lifting kind of tightened everything up and maybe squished you down
squished
a little bit.
Get better leverage. Yes. Cheated. It's a form of cheating.
Yeah.
Getting shorter for the lift. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. More guys would do that if they could figure out a way to do it surgically, I'm sure. You know.
Oh, I'm sure they can.
Hega, did you travel around a lot with Ed to some of the meets early on and stuff like that?
Yeah, everywhere, all over the world.
Oh, cool.
And then we met in 92, and I didn't move to the United States until 97.
Right.
So we kind of long distance dated, but I went to all these competitions in between.
What was some of that like? I know, like, you know, sometimes you know, he can walk by a lot of people and they'll have no idea who he is, mm-hmm. but when somebody does know who mm-hmm. he is, they probably get pretty fired up, right?
Yeah. Everyone lost interest in me. Like, it was different. All the guys were looking at me like, I still got it. And like, do you really know
that's funny. More guys look at me than girls.
Yeah. I know. Isn't
and
that
they would
the
come
worst
over
fucking
and I'm
power
like,
thing?
Yes, why are you coming over? Do you really know Ed Cohen? Like, yes, I do.
You're like,
my
God.
So that was the end of it for me.
Damn.
That's kind of why we're still together.
Yeah.
For some of these people that are listening that maybe don't know your numbers, you want to put them out there? Because we have some people that, you know, from a CrossFit world or a bodybuilding world that may not know some of your accomplishments. You want to let them loose
on
it?
Sure. I started off in the 165-pound class at real light. Nothing really impressive at 165.
You're pretty young, yeah?
Yeah. I was still a teenager at 165. At 181, I had pulled a 791 deadlift, and that was...
nothing.
That was when I was still 20 years old. And then when I went up to 198, that's when I started filling out my leverages because I have real short legs, but a real long torso, real wide.
You're naturally kind of skinny?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Yeah, you had to put some meat on.
In my first year in high school, I was 4'11", 98 pounds as a wrestler.
Well, you and Stan Efferding could have gone at it.
Yeah. But, you know, it's weird. I was 4'11", 98 pounds, and I could still palm a basketball.
Yeah. Yeah, jeez. Just had the mitts.
Big mitts. The first time you ever touched a weight, like, you know, what kind of numbers did you hit? Do you remember?
Well,
any
when
of those
I
numbers?
First started training was in my parents' basement when I was a kid, still in grammar school, and they bought these like weird isokinetic machines, like these tension 12 machines.
12 or something, 13, 14.
Yeah. And I would just hammer away on these two machines. One was one was like a leg press.
Write that down. Isokinetic machine.
Yeah.
Google it.
One was like a leg press, and I would go crazy on that. And the other one was like a bench press that I could do bench, bent over rows, little curls, and shoulder presses and stuff like that. And I would be down there forever in the middle of the night, and they'd have to come downstairs because they'd hear me screaming and making all this noise and stuff, and had to calm me down because I was possessed.
Right. You're just going after it, huh?
Yeah, and then when I got in the real weights, the first gym I joined when I was just getting into freshman year in high school, I deadlifted 435, complete stiff leg without knowing what I was doing.
Without ever deadlifting before.
Right.
Wow. So, I mean that's a really good thing to bring up, I think, because, you know, a lot of times people don't really understand, you know, that sometimes people are just made to do certain things, you know, and people always talk about like following their passion, following things they love and following things they're good at and stuff like that. I mean, that's very fucking clear that you were, you know, gifted at it right away. Obviously, it takes a long time to work up to the 900-pound deadlift and some of the other things that you did. But it's interesting to me that, you know, you kind of come in with that off the bat. Is there any sort of strength history in your background or your lineage somewhere?
Bunch of stubborn Irishmen.
Yeah.
Bar fights.
Yeah. I was just stubborn, and I get that mostly from my mother.
Yeah.
100%. I was scared to death of her as a kid. She was tough. And I don't know. I think it's because I was pretty good off the bat, it's easy to take an interest in it then.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
And I just
positive reinforcement right away.
Yeah, but then I just fell in love with it because I was so short and so small that I didn't like to be that little guy.
Yeah.
So I was just going to get strong, and first, you know, like everyone else, I saw Arnold on Pumping Iron, and I was talking to Mark earlier, and I tried to be Arnold until I realized he was 6'2". So I tried to be Franco, and Franco was a strong guy, and I started gravitating towards strength stuff.
Right. He benched pretty good and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and he was a good deadlifter, yeah. Monster.
I think he deadlifted like 765 or something like
something,
that.
Something, yeah, in the
750 sevens. Maybe?
Yeah.
I think so.
Blowing up the hot water bottle all the time.
Yeah.
So, and then
cars.
And then when I saw Kaz on TV, I was like, oh, wait a second. You could be big and strong and don't have to diet? Now I found my spot.
Any idea what year that was? Maybe like 85, 86?
No, not even. That was way before that, because 85, I was already at 198. So it would probably right around the freshman year before
it was
I went to the first
was it
meet.
A strongman thing or was it a powerlifting meet?
A powerlifting meet. I did go in a bodybuilding contest, though. Hmm. I took, like, you know, way down the line in the class before they even had music. And like Lance Dreher and some of these
out there just flexing.
Sergio was there in the audience. Yeah, pretty much. I took Franco's book and I did every pose, his little posing routine in the back, and did it up on stage. That was my posing routine.
And you later went on to break Bill Kazmaier's record. You did a
63 eventually.
Yeah. I remember seeing that meet because I remember seeing it, you know, just on the YouTubes. I remember seeing, you know, the last deadlift, you pull 887, and you pulled it conventional, and your best deadlift sumo is 901. So they're pretty much almost
pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, they're almost identical.
Just different weight classes.
And you pulled that way because you had an injury, right?
Yeah, I torn my adductor doing sumo. So I figured let me give conventional a shot and see what I can get it up to.
But that day, that lift in particular sticks out in my head as like the coolest lift you've ever done, because you were so emotional after. You were so fired up. And I remember I actually texted you. I was like, kind of like, what was that about? Because I've seen a lot of your other stuff, and you were always like kind of stoic, and you went up there and you just did your thing. You were probably confident that you could do it. You didn't act like an asshole. You just did the lift, and you were always like enthusiastic about it, but you were never really like outwardly going crazy.
That broke the highest total ever record. So
regardless of body weight.
That's what I was after. I was a light 242, like 235 or something.
Yeah, and the record was held by a 275 or 308 or something.
Super heavyweight. That was Anthony Clark at 2458 or Passanella, one or the other.
I think Kazmaier had the record. You broke it, and then I think you said that Anthony Clark then broke the record, right? And you went back and forth, and you ended up getting it.
It's nuts.
And still to this day, 2463, has anybody done that in single ply in any federation?
The new single ply stuff, not the old one. The old single ply stuff, that was pretty much it.
So somebody's gone over 20, 24, 63 in some sort of single ply Fed of some sort.
Not at 242 or 220.
Yeah, not that I know of either.
Yeah, it's a big total.
The one at 220 was single ply, just the squat. We weren't allowed to use bench shirts there, and there was no deadlift suits available yet.
Why weren't you allowed to wear a bench shirt?
I don't know. There was some IPF rule at the time. It was done at the 1991 Nationals in Dallas, Texas, the USPF. They didn't allow bench shirts, so that was Raw. I did 545 in that one.
Is this just all when gear's becoming more and more popular around that time? Yeah, in terms of single ply, multi-ply, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and at the time, the IPF didn't know what they were doing. So
yeah, they weren't. They didn't.
They
kind of
nixed bench
both.
Shirts for that year.
Yeah, so you had a single ply suit.
That's crazy.
And nothing in it, other lifts, like wrist wraps or some shit.
Yeah, that's
That's fucking nuts.
2 hour weigh-ins.
Right.
But remember that all that we cheated back then too. The weights were fake. I really weighed 265.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
72 hour weigh-ins.
Yeah, those balsa wood plates, like the old Weider picture ones.
Did you help him cheat, Haga?
I did. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Ed Cohn's confession. That's what this podcast is.
So when you were going around to all these different competitions with him, I know things got like pretty intense over the years, all the way to the point where he ended up getting banned from the IPF, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what was some of that like? Like, you know, you were there with him. Like, what was going on with that? Were people just pissed because he was so fucking strong? Or what was the deal?
I don't know. It's difficult to say.
No comment.
It's a lot of politics and powerlifting. So.
Well, I mean, even some of the rules kind of changed, I think, because of him. Weren't they kind of saying you couldn't put the bar that low? And
they changed that rule now, though.
Okay, now you can stick it.
They changed a lot of the rules.
Feds you can't. I believe the USPA, there's a too low of a bar possible.
The IPF, I think, lets you do that now.
Yeah,
as long
nuts.
As you make stay erect at the beginning and at the end of the squat.
That's crazy.
How
Which
was it?
You
know, how was it like when Ed did really well in a meet versus when he did really bad? Was he one way or the other? Was he always pretty?
No, actually, I've never been to a competition where he didn't do really well.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's true.
Asshole.
There you go, fucking legend.
But I have to say that one thing is like typical for him is that he never really have a bad. Even though he would have bad lifts in the gym, he would never bring that with him home. He would never like ponder and never like beat himself up so that would affect the next. Training. So then whatever he did at the gym, he left it at the gym, went home, and never did that mistake again.
How did you do that? You kind of keep track of, you're like, okay, that sucked, and here's what I need to do next to make sure that that's better?
100%. I always knew what went wrong during the lift. Usually it wasn't a strength problem. It was a technical flaw or a missed, I screwed up my warm-ups or my head wasn't into it. But physically it wasn't a strength problem, so I knew how to correct it. And it's just a learning experience. I mean, it's like, how do you develop your mental edge? Well, that's not just something that you could give someone or say, this is how you do it. It happens over time and you learn it.
Here's a question I see a lot on the internet to tons of coaches and stuff, but obviously your experience is above most. What about like your PRs in terms of what you did in the gym and what you did in a meet? Did you save like kind of your big list for a meet day and try to hit the biggest numbers there? Or did you make sure that you could pull 881 in the gym conventional and then do it in the
the only one that was different was like in the deadlift. I doubled 900 before that meet in 1991 where I pulled 901.
So I was expecting
to do more, but I pulled the 901, the actual weight I called for was 898 to break 2400 first. That was the main thing. I always counted myself as a power lifter first and worry about the records afterwards. But the weights were heavy, so it weighed out to 901. Mm. And I tried 920, which would have been 920-something. And I almost had it, but it was a little anticlimactic.
Yeah.
So I got it past my knees, and then I just lost concentration.
So you doubled something in the gym, and then that's kind of like a second attempt.
Yeah, but besides everything else, I pretty much maybe off-season I'd go a little heavier, but for the most part it was mostly the sets of five, triples and doubles where I excelled at the plan on what I was going to do at the meet. And in the meet day, the only lift at a meet that I'd base on my training was my opener. After that, it was how the opener felt. And then I went on what can I do on this day, not on what I did at the gym. That's the only way you could go 8 for 9 or 9
day
for
by
nine.
Day, right?
Yeah, that's it.
How did you, improve your form and technique over the years? You know, you kind of just mentioned repetitions. Is that something that helped quite a bit?
Yeah, the repetitions are, to me, I use the analogy like only that you guys wouldn't understand out in California. Mark Wilk, from being from New York, is you're the first one down the street after it snows.
Right, right.
Do you want to be the first one or the guy who, the 100th guy down the street?
Right.
So how do you set that path? By repetition, right, to set that groove. And right, that's how I did it.
Right.
It's all muscle memory, really. Right?
Yeah, your body adapts to that groove, to that neuromuscular pathway.
And that did that change over time as your body weight changed? Or
not that much, because I made my body work into that spot. My levers were good enough where, you know, I wasn't fat.
Right.
And I still had the long arms, so I could fit into certain positions.
So there wasn't
Says
really
you,
that
you
much
weren't fat.
P-H-A-T.
So it didn't really change that. Your body composition didn't change that much.
No.
Your leverages didn't change that much.
No.
As your weight changed. Yeah.
Hey, what do you think makes him different, you know, like when he was competing? You know, what was something you think that separated him out from some other lifters that you've seen? You said you were around other lifters.
I think he was just a badass when it comes to wanting to train. I think nothing could stop him. I remember I had just moved from Norway to the U.S. and the whole basement flooded. We were like knee high in water. And so we had to, you know, carry buckets, but it was squat day. So guess who carried buckets of water by herself? He literally stepped over me.
He's turning purple.
Yeah, he stepped over me.
He's beyond red right now. That's great.
No, it's true.
So he stepped over me. I had a big, like a powerlifting belt on because my back wasn't too healthy. So I was carrying buckets and he walked
She's
over
injured.
Me. And I was injured. And then he, like power and everything was out. So I knew that once he got to the gym, it would be closed anyway.
Right.
But what if it was? What if it wasn't?
Right, right.
Yeah. So he drove all the way. Probably took him 3 hours to get there. It was close. So he came home, and I remember I was like, "What have I done? I left my country for this." And yeah, is it going to be like that? And that's exactly how it is. When I lived in Norway, he used to come and visit me. He would always come on and visit me on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, why always Tuesday? Well, he squatted on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Then he would go home and eat, pack his bags, fly overnight, land on Tuesday when he was off. And then he could go and bench on Wednesday in Norway after a good night's sleep.
Exactly.
It never
get
changed.
Back in time on the never next changed. Monday to
yep.
squat again.
Yep.
You talked about doing sets of like 5, 3, double, stuff like that. Did you base off a percentage of your max, or did you just go in and say,
no,
I'm going to...
I based it off... When I started off training like that. Tens, eights, fives, triples, doubles, the old linear periodization. But after a period of time, if you do a few of those cycles, you learn how to pick your numbers based on every cycle that came before that.
Hmm.
So the percentages change, too, because some people are good at doing reps. Some
right.
people are good at going heavy. So it changes from person to person and based on your body weight or your levers. So it's not a cookie cutter type thing.
Would you kind
so,
of say that, like in general, percentages, like, you know, it can go 5% either way almost
yeah.
type thing?
Yeah, yeah. So you give yourself enough leeway. Like when I used to figure out my training cycles, I used to just start at the back end and work down.
Right.
Right.
And look at it, and then I'd change it, and then I'd change it again, and I'd change it again. It was, you know, kind of like that movie with Jim Carrey, 23, where he had those numbers all over
oh,
the
yeah,
place.
Yeah.
That would be me with routines. I'd have hundreds of different routines and
right.
numbers written down, so I found out what would work for that training cycle.
So you were documenting all the time.
Always.
Every day.
And I had to look at it to make sure it was doable
uh-huh.
from start to finish. If those first 3 or 4 weeks are doable, the rest of the training cycle is going to go no problem as long as you pick your numbers correctly.
Uh-huh.
That's all it's about is picking your numbers correctly. That's why there's so many different routines. So many different routines are similar in a lot of ways, and it's just, oh, well, maybe he does a little more volume, maybe he does a little more sets of this or whatever, but most of this start at week one, and how do I get to week 10 or 12 or 14 or whatever it is.
Right. So you think that's what it takes to be a champion is to think about it almost 24/7?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like that's kind of like the way your
yeah,
career
it's,
was.
How bad do you want it?
Right. You're thinking about it constantly, writing it down and making sure you're getting enough sleep. And what 100%. About like nutrition and stuff?
Back then, I would eat whatever I wanted. I'd make sure I got enough nutrition.
Did people talk about protein? And
not really.
Not a ton.
Not really. The only thing I'd do there is I'd take my vitamins and I'd have a filet before I went to bed.
Right.
That
the
was
anabolic stack from Joe Weider.
Yeah, anabolic megapack.
Anabolic megapack.
Steroid replacement kit.
Yeah.
Where do you get some of that?
I don't think he sells it anymore.
They don't sell that anymore.
There's no more steroid replacements?
He may have been fined too many times.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you've seen a lot of change over the course of your career. Different trends in gyms and workout styles and supplements and all that stuff. Like what are the things you miss from those days?
There's a lot more camaraderie, I think, in those days.
Yeah.
There's so much more splits going on with egos and Facebook and all that stuff. That
Facebook's the worst.
Well, people are, it's like, when did everyone turn into pussies where you can't say, oh, wow, your squat was a little high?
Yeah.
Or why don't you do this? And everyone takes everything so personal. Fuck, I wasn't perfect.
Well, you know what?
Tell me what I did wrong or how this one looked. Thanks.
Right.
Yeah.
A good example of that was Powerlifting Watch. Powerlifting Watch used to be so popular back when anybody can comment on there anonymously, and now like no one goes there anymore
even though
the hatred is not great, it's what was trying to drive people there, and people were able to comment freely and kind of say, oh, well, the guy didn't touch.
Yeah, remember Tony Cardella used to have the old GoHeavy.com.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That was like the first one that was super popular. And then,
right.
But there's a lot of great training information on
there.
Sure. You know?
And then end up egos get involved and people turn into dicks.
What are some other things you miss from, you know, the early days? Was anything Zubas. Simpler, you know, shit like that? Or
yeah, there was less federations.
Okay.
Yeah. There was more standardized rules where now a lot of these guys go to their buddies are judging these local meets, so they're ready to give a white light right away. It's
right.
Just, people are afraid to give red lights anymore.
You judged my first 600-pound deadlift. Does that mean it's 100% legit?
Did I give you a red light?
No. You gave it to me. Yeah, I smashed it.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, Ed will do anything for a dollar. I mean, Jesus Christ. Give a guy a
dollar or a blowy.
It's really easy. If it's good, it's good. If I have to think about it, I'm going to give you a white light. Because you, if I'm not 100% sure, I got to give the credit to the lifter. It's like a tie goes to the runner.
Right.
There's nothing worse when you ask a judge what happened and they don't give you a clear answer. Know. You're like, what the fuck does that mean? Yeah. Why'd you give me a red light, motherfucker?
If you've been judging all day, usually, you don't know.
Usually that judge just looks at the other judge and says, it's because he gave you a red light.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, what? And you ask him and he says the same thing about the other guy. You're like, fuck. Yeah. Oh, damn, not getting any answers here.
Mm-hmm.
What was the best competition you competed in? Like your favorite one to compete in?
Some of the ones overseas were like, because the crowds would be massive and crazy. You go to Finland, and it's like everybody's a power lifter.
That's pretty cool.
Everybody's a fan of strength there.
What was the environment like, even when just getting off the plane and stuff? Were you treated really well because people were excited about seeing this event type thing, or was it just...
and everyone knew who you were.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
I've heard from a couple guys it's kind of like that in Australia right now.
Yeah, I've been to Australia 4 times this last year.
Wow.
Awesome people.
Yeah.
The nicest people, great lifters, and they're coming on strong.
Yeah. That's really cool.
And it's just like being in the U.S., only people are nice there.
So it's the same, but
same, but different.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's awesome. And then what about, what's your, what contest are you the most proud of?
Mostly all of them. I mean, I've screwed up here and there, but. And I take my lumps for it.
Yeah, one where you really felt you had, good competition, or you really, just hit all the numbers that you wanted to, or something was really gratifying, and
Well, the 2400 one where I pulled 901, and
that
one was one of the most satisfying. And like I said, the one in Vegas where when I went conventional and I broke had the highest total ever.
Yeah,
that was a good proving point to myself that I could actually do it, because I first squatted 1,000 there too.
Awesome.
The way I wanted to.
Right.
Yeah.
But
4 inches
high. Too.
It was just
it was a different competition out of all the competitions I've seen, because you just woke up and you were like ready to go, and you had like, he was doing his Elvis impersonation and everything. He was just different. He used to be always nervous. He couldn't eat.
He was
happy. A mess.
Real happy.
Yes.
He's giving me the signal about real happy.
He was real happy.
Oh, 10 for 10. Huh?
Yeah. I was happy when I woke up in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah. For that.
Yeah.
Squatting with the boner.
Yeah, something, just something
was
in the
just
air.
Something different.
I woke up in a good mood.
In the zone.
Yeah.
And
Elvis was your prep music?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I woke up doing an Elvis impersonation.
The fucking king.
Nothing but a hound dog.
I was a hound dog.
That's what I said.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
No, but I thought that was a different.
Yeah, that was a different. I woke up different that day.
Yeah.
It's just like I knew it was going to be a good day.
Everything just felt light.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everyone can say, well, Ed Cohen did it this way. And I did things the way I wanted to do them. And that's what I'm most happy with. I don't care how anyone else really does anything.
Right.
It doesn't matter. It's still powerlifting, whether it's multiply. I got a bunch of friends that did multiply and still do multiply. I don't care. Have frickin' fun.
Well, just because they don't have any ethics and they want to put on more layers doesn't mean they're not human beings, right?
Mark
I mean,
Bell
if they want to squat high and count it, then go ahead.
As long as you don't say that was better than this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, that gets pretty ridiculous.
Then it's that stupid, like, you know, and I've always said it about that that all-time list.
Right.
I don't really approve of it because you lump everyone together under different sets of circumstances, and you can't.
Right. Hey, you already mentioned you missed there's less federations back then and more community, and now it's all broken. I mean, there's sleeves, there's Raw with wraps, Classic Raw, this Raw, no wraps, no belt. Multiply, single ply, you know, you even yourself, you said you squatted in single ply and bench Raw. Like, there's just so many factors.
But think about the people that are outside the sport who wants to, you know,
yeah, they're like, huh?
Look at all the CrossFit people.
Yeah.
I train some CrossFit people too. He owns, one of the guys has a couple CrossFit gyms, CrossFit Defined in Chicago. And he brings some of his trainers to learn proper form and stuff. So even the CrossFitters are learning from the
program. Oh, they're hungry.
Yeah.
And, you know, all over Australia and some of the other countries, you see some of the top Olympic lifters.
Right.
Kolkoff is going around with Charles Poliquin teaching everyone proper technique and stuff. So definitely the strength game, the Olympic lifters and power lifters are helping out everybody else now with technique.
Yeah, it's really cool to see other people getting into the sport. And, you know, we've seen it more and more out here when we were running competitions that, you know, how many people were signing up. Like, we had a contest. The time frame of all this is very short. We ran a contest. Stan was wanting to compete. He was all fired up, and he was like, man, I feel fucking strong. He's like, I want to do a meet. And I was like, well, I don't have anything scheduled. And he's like, well, let's fucking schedule one. He's like, I'll fly in judges, and we'll do whatever. I'm like, all right. Yeah.
I judged. I was the head judge all day.
Yeah. So he basically just said, hey, let's do a meet. And so we put one together. But we made it for free because it was kind of on short notice. And there was like 17 people there. Mm-hmm. And then just months later, you know, maybe 8 months later or so and something like that, every time we put up a contest, 70 people would show up because of the CrossFitters coming into the community.
Yeah, but you know, if you run a meet where your judging is good and everyone has a good time and it's well run,
right,
they want to come back to that.
Right.
And then word gets out, this was a really good, fun meet. Because if it's run properly and the atmosphere is really good and the people are nice that are running it, you can't help but have a good day.
Right.
It's only when other shit gets politics and assholes and everything else get involved that it translate onto the lifters and then you get a bad name.
Yeah, so it's get too complicated.
We
put some effort into making sure that the meets were a good experience. I kind of missed them this year because Jesse's handling them this year. So, but yeah, it's nice. You can tell people are having a good time because you walk through the gym and everybody's fired up. And
yeah,
there's nobody
and it
bitching
stays that way all the way through. And everyone at the end of the day still is in a good mood.
Right.
It's pretty simple, too. Like, just make sure people have fun. Make sure no one gets hurt. And make sure people have the best opportunity to lift the most amount of weight.
Yeah, make sure judging's consistent and what else you need.
That's a tough thing to do, though. I mean, I'm sure you have thoughts about judging around the world and different kinds of meets. I'm not saying, you know, throw anybody under the bus.
I won't.
But what about that variation over the course of a particular meet when you have different people in the seats at different times? I mean, did you ever think
that? Or? There's two ways to look at it. One is, when you go to a meet and you're more worried about the judges than you are your own lifting,
right?
That now you got a problem. Yeah. Now that comes onto the federation where they should have judges that are fair and consistent all the time,
right?
And the other is you don't want them too lenient,
right? Yeah, because a cheap lift doesn't feel good to anybody, honestly.
And then you could also say, well, that's why there's three damn judges in the chair.
Right.
Right.
You got three different lights, three different opinions.
Right.
It blows my mind that judging always is a factor, or it's a factor everywhere, but that it's always a topic of conversation in powerlifting where, you know, you grew up in Chicago. I'm sure you watch football and basketball and all this. Like, refs pay attention, and here and there ESPN will kill some refs for a bad call on an NBA game, but it's here and there. Like, why is it such a big deal?
Depends on what federation you go to.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But like in the NBA, like, yeah, there's a bad call here and there, but like generally they're just consistent, right? That's all you really want.
It's almost 100% subjective though. Like, you know, in the NBA, like, you know, the ball either hit off the other guy and went out of bounds or it didn't. There's like at least a little bit of black and white. What the guy actually saw might vary, you know, because he might not have saw it. He might not have been the right place.
Yeah, there's so many different angles. The refs can't see every single thing.
But,
even if you're right, if it happens right in front of the ref, it could happen on the other side.
One of our lifters here, Austin Baumgarten, really smart guy. He had a great quote, and it sticks with me because I think it was really profound in kind of what he said. But he said powerlifting is more related to figure skating than it is to football. like a lot of us played football, so we think it's more related to football and like scoring a touchdown or getting the ball over the line or something, but it's so subjective and it's up to the judges to make a decision. Figure skating every year, every time in the Olympics, every single time, there's always a fucking controversy with the judges. Always. Judging on, you know, whether the person did the right move at the right time.
Or bodybuilding.
Yeah. Right. So it does unfortunately come down to the judges, but there is one way to solve it 100%, and that's for the lifter to do the lift the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, you got to look at it. If you're allowed to have 24-hour weigh-ins, a squat bar, a deadlift bar, you got better knee wraps nowadays. You get
Thanks to Slingshot.
Hey!
Yeah, right. You got, I mean, with the 24-hour weigh-ins, it's not like two-hour weigh-ins.
Right.
It's so much easier. You can use a monolift if you want. Why can't you squat below parallel? You got everything else going for you.
I don't know. Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
I don't know why I can't squat below.
Yeah, we'll deal with
that
tomorrow.
God damn, Ed. You're being so mean.
That was a low blow.
You know what's funny is like every time we post up a video, and I've been squatting this way for a while, especially raw. I mean, I try to just go as low as I can, and some days feel better than others. I got a fucking shitty hip. And I just don't move as good as I used to. But I try to squat as low as I can. But nearly every time we put up a video, people are like, oh, my God, he went so low. They don't even look at the weight that's on the bar anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, you went so low. They're
yeah,
so
two
excited.
Plates.
And I didn't go that low. I actually broke parallel is all I actually
did. Yeah, you
did
it legal. See, a lot of people aren't used to seeing that anymore.
Right,
they don't look
right.
Like the old thing where, oh, you can't judge a squat from the front. Yes, you can.
Yeah, you sure can.
Yeah.
If it's done the right way.
Yeah.
And look at the way Stan has been squatting lately. You know, that close stance? I mean, that's clearly several inches below parallel,
yeah.
No matter
yeah.
what angle you look at it. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, you can judge them from the front. I think it's harder if it's on the borderline. And I think
here's a question.
If it's a huge dude like J.P.
Right.
Carroll just did a squat 900 or 915.
Well, here would be a question. If you can't judge from the front, don't fucking sit in the front.
Yeah.
Sit in a different spot. Make a different rule. Have people line up.
Take that front chair and move it over. Just
like 15 degrees.
A little better.
Why
is
our sport so retarded?
I think the hardest part to judge is videos.
Right.
And everyone's the video critique. Like, videos are so hard. Like, you can't move your head. Like, you know, you can't change the angle at all. Like you said, even in a head chair, you can kind of wiggle your head to the side if somebody's a big dude and you need to see their hip or whatever. But in video, it's impossible.
Yeah.
I've always found if I was on the side judging the squats, I was down on a knee. You know, usually I didn't sit in the chair that much because I couldn't see that well.
And a lot
you'd
of people got away with so much.
Right.
Yeah.
I seen a picture of a guy posted a lift where it showed it from the side. And he says, yeah, this is the lowest position I got, blah, blah, blah. This was X amount of weight, this record.
He's trying to show how low he got.
And I'm looking, I'm like,
he's way above.
The crease is even close. You're two inches high still.
Right.
It's like they've gotten away with it for so long that they don't understand
it.
But then when people look at some really good lifters that have done that, then that becomes the norm.
Right.
Yeah.
It becomes kind of the new standard.
Yeah, just squat below.
Yeah, it's not always easy to judge, but again, if you just leave it on the lifter should know the feel. I mean, you can kind of tell.
But some lifters have gotten away with a lot for a long time.
Yeah, so. Maybe they don't know what it feels like anymore.
Exactly.
I got a weird question for you. Have you ever cried, you know, from a bad workout or from a bad meet or from, you know, has it ever meant that much to you to where you've gotten that upset about it?
I've cried before deadlifts, getting ready for a deadlift.
Getting yourself so worked up?
Yeah.
Really? What were you like? What was going through your mind to get yourself that worked up?
I put my head in Brian Schoonfeld's chest.
Well, that sounds scary.
Yeah, so just the hair alone.
and the stench. The stench made you.
The nipples poking out just in my eyes, tickling my nose. But just to get myself fired up. And, I got real emotional getting ready to deadlift. But
did it work?
Yeah. But I would never let the energy out. I always kept my energy in. If I let it out, I always felt like I didn't have it when it came.
Right.
When I got all the
bubble
way up to the platform.
Before you got out there, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
You see other lifters sometimes headbutt the bar and do these different things. Do you think that's just...
I think it's a waste of energy.
Okay.
I think a lot of times, that's almost like a substitute for ammonia. It's to break a negative thought. They're doubting their own self, so they got to do that.
Mm. They got to do something. Yeah. They got to try to convince themselves that everything's going
to
be okay.
But it's a huge waste of mental energy alone to do that.
You'd rather see somebody just keep the energy inside and just
blow it up.
Right.
In the same way, I'd like to see people hold on to ammonia for when they really need it and not, you know.
Every training session.
Oh, I could never use it.
We're talking to you, super trainer. Everybody in this gym just smells ammonia on like 135 on a bench. Jesus,
I don't get it. I don't get it.
What do you think about that from a training perspective to get yourself so like you know, people are taking like these pre-workouts and all these different things to get ready for a workout. And you said you got yourself amped up for a deadlift, but I'd imagine that was in a contest and he needed the big deadlift, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it's a waste of energy just to get yourself that hyped up for each training session? You should just train, right?
You should train.
Right.
Some of it, some guys need pre-workout because of how they, their jobs.
I mean, they come
in here freaking tired. They need to be amped up a little bit. But physically and to hold your mental thoughts together, you're better off channeling it in a more positive way and not wasting that energy.
Right. What are some things you would think about to you know, prepare yourself for workouts and stuff, especially when the weights were starting to get real, real heavy?
It was every workout, everything I did was exactly the same. How I walked up to the bar, how I grabbed the bar, how I got under it, how I got tight. Everything was exactly the same from 135 up to 1,000, and the same on the bench and deadlift. So there was no variable that was changed.
Did fear ever become a factor? Did you ever get kind of, you know, as you you know, you get a lot of weight on there and you start thinking, fuck, man, how am I going to walk this thing out?
Hell yeah. If I could walk it out right, then as soon as I got set up, as soon as I started going down, if I could stay tight enough, I knew I would come up with it. If there was a break in concentration, then that doubt fucks you up right when you hit the hole.
I remember I was getting ready for a USPF meet, and I was like, I'm going to watch some Ed Cohn videos, see if I can try to figure out how to walk weight out. And then I started watching videos of you, and I'm like, he just looks like he got launched out of a fucking cannon. I'm like, I don't know if there's much to learn from that, because the weights were so heavy, especially compared to your body weight. You just looked like you just fucking fell backwards and just stood with it and squatted.
Controlled.
Falling with style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know if I can learn.
You know what's funny is, you know, I hadn't squatted 2 years before I had a hip replacement. And then 6 months after a hip replacement, when I started squatting again, maybe a little sooner, I walked up to the bar with one plate on the bar, and my body knew exactly what to do, exactly every single step. I walked up to the bar the same way. I took it out, walked it out. Everything was perfect, exactly the same as it always was.
There you go.
At what point do you, in a training cycle, do you start thinking about who might be competing against you in a meet?
Never.
Never, ever. What about the day of meet or
never?
Never.
No, I only worried about the lifts that I could do.
Was there anybody you tried to compete with, you know, when you were training? I know, like, a lot of times it looks like you're almost training by yourself, but, like, you ever have a buddy that you're trying to stay 100 pounds ahead of or anything like that?
No. Not really. I only wanted to do the lifts that I knew that I could do. Mm-hmm. That's all that mattered to me. It didn't matter what anyone else did. It was only I had to fulfill what I knew I could do, and that I'd be pissed if I didn't.
So you're just writing your own math all the way through and not really paying attention to the other numbers.
Didn't care.
Yeah.
Training at a quads gym in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, like Mike mentioned earlier, you know, no internet and none of that stuff going on back then. I mean, were you kind of like famous in the town, and like did people get excited to kind of, you know, when you came?
Only in the lifting community.
Just mainly in the lifting community.
Yeah, powerlifters, bodybuilders, stuff like that. That's the only people that knew me.
Did like other people in the gym ever kind of like start checking out what you were doing and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
They started going, what the hell?
The coolest thing, if there was old people in the gym and you'd think that they'd like be shunned away. Right. And no, they loved it. They come up to you afterwards. How much was that? That was unbelievable when your nose popped. And this and it would be so cool for them.
What's the deal with the workout where you you fucking collapsed? you collapsed on, I'm sure you collapsed in more than one workout, but I saw a video.
A deadlift.
You were deadlifting.
Yeah, I had a strained iliosacral ligament in my lower back. So when I deadlifted, I mistimed my breathing, so I did the salvo maneuver. Right. So after I locked it out, and it was only 750, but when I put it down, it hit. And I just started wobbling, and I fell straight over head first into the floor. Not one of my training partners helped me. They just sit there and giggled at me. And, you know, that was like for the old Powerlifter video magazine.
Yeah.
And afterwards, I looked in the camera. I said, people pay a lot of money for a rush like that.
I remember, you know, you passed out, and, you know, you figure, okay, well, that's probably the end of the clip. But the next clip is you going heavier.
Yeah. So it's easy. It's already done.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned, like, you had to lift slow because you were injured or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was just watching, and I'm like, that looks so fucking painful.
It was.
It's like deadlifting 750 slow, you know, with like a 5 second.
It was like it won't leave the floor till the pain gets up to a certain point, and then it pops off the floor, and it's easy after that. But, Yeah, it was pretty painful. You live and learn. You got to adapt.
How'd you recover from some of these epic workouts? It seemed like you handled a lot of volume.
You know what? I had a chiropractor that I'd go to almost every single day. He lived right, a guy named James Stockson, who he has a place in Chicago now, but he was in my little town of Evergreen Park, him and his father, and he treated me for free every single day. I'd go there and get treated.
Did you help him at all, Haga, or you just laugh at him?
I just laughed at him. I still do.
Yeah. More. You're a nurse, right?
Yeah, but he won't get any help from me.
Oh, yeah, he won't, yeah.
My wife is a nurse.
Only
so I'm very...
three rectals.
Oh, yes. There you go, the rectal exam. Yeah.
I'm very similar with the yes. lack of empathy yeah. Yeah. from the nursing community.
You're not dying. Yeah. You're not going to get any. Yeah.
If it's not, if you're
pretty
not
much.
Falling mm-hmm. off, if you don't
my quads
it.
Are yeah. sore, fuck you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, were there any other recovery methods you used? Ice bath or anything weird?
I stretched a little bit. And you were young and healthy, and my training was always pretty right all the time. Mm-hmm. So no.
Yeah, you normally did each lift once a week.
Yeah, I had another day where I did light benches and stuff, and I did a bunch of I did do a lot of bodybuilding exercises.
Yeah, like shoulder work and stuff.
Yeah, extra back work, extra leg work, tries, a couple sets of curls here and there. But
tons of curls.
Yeah, even calves and abs. And back in those days, there wasn't boards, there wasn't chains, there wasn't all that stuff.
Yeah.
No slingshots at the time. So the only way to get overloads and stuff was to do different grips on different bodybuilding exercises.
How the fuck did you work out without a slingshot? That's yeah. the most impressive yes. thing yes. you've mentioned yeah. so far. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, what about other things like straps? Do you ever use straps to deadlift or back work or anything? Or I know you got mitts, but what are your thoughts on them in general?
I don't really care for them to deadlift, but for assistance exercises, yeah, that's
chin-ups or whatever?
No, not chin-ups.
Oh, dumbbell rows?
Yeah, like for heavy barbell rows yeah, and yeah. stuff like that if you went up to a certain point. Oh, definitely.
We get some of the same questions all the time, and two that pop up quite often on the squat and the deadlift. What are some things people can do to kind of prevent their hips from shooting up in the bottom of a squat? Or even if that is a problem, and then also the same thing happening on the deadlift, the hips shooting up before the weight leaves the floor.
But people forget that it's not just a pull in the deadlift, it's also a push. And they forget in the squat, it's not just a push with your legs, you also got to push with your back.
Right.
So as long as you drive through the floor and drive through the bar, going down and going up at the same time, mm-hmm. that's the only the way the hips move forward. It's kind of like a hinge on a door. If both ends don't go at the same time, the middle doesn't go through.
Mm, okay. Right. And it's okay to use your lower back on a squat. You know, I think some people...
You have to.
Yeah, some people kind of get fearful of that, and they try to keep this real upright posture. But
it won't release the hips then.
Right.
Yeah, you're all quads if you're totally upright. Yeah,
yeah, you can only do that if you do like a high bar closer stance yeah. Olympic weightlifter squat.
You mentioned... There's kind of like two, I'm sure there's millions of different ways to squat, but you kind of mentioned two different types of squatters. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit? It's a hip squatter and a back squatter or something like that you mentioned to me before?
Well,
a quad maybe?
Yeah, with the quad squatter, you're always going to be more upright. Your hips aren't going to shoot back, and you're not going to sit back on your butt and hamstrings and more towards the back of your foot.
So a little bit like Eric Lillibridge maybe?
He stays Eric used to be more of a quad squatter where he was straight
upright.
Up and down. He had a harder time hitting position yeah. as far as depth, and his squat was 100 pounds, more than 100 pounds less.
Yeah.
When the bar was higher, yeah.
He squatted 881,
at
kind
270.
Of yeah. started to stall
yeah,
a little
when
bit.
We finally got Eric to move the bar down, then you could see him using more hip, more hamstring, more back, more of his whole body into the lift, and you see what happened.
Yeah.
Derek Kendall was the same way. We got Derek to move the bar down.
Yeah, Derek is a monster.
Yeah, he has no idea how strong he is. I mean, yeah. an 820 front squat with knee sleeves.
And the way he's benching and stuff, too, is just
yeah, and he crazy. Can handle a huge amount of volume in training.
And he lives out by you. You train yeah. him a little bit here and there.
Yeah, yeah, he listens. He's a really smart kid. He's a grade school teacher.
Do you work out with him at all?
No.
You just kind of like coach
him
up.
He works
him
out too
bit.
Hard for me now.
Yeah. Too fast.
He's a big screamer too. It sounds like there's a bear in the back of the gym. It's like, oh my god, what the hell is going on back there?
Something's going
oh,
on.
Oh yeah, it's yeah. There's he's pretty intense. Very very strong guy.
We talked a little bit earlier about your hip replacement. Like, at what point did you start to say, I know that I have enough of a problem that I'm going to have to get it fixed at some point, and it's not going to resolve itself? And then
when the pain was so bad that I was crying.
Yeah. And where? How long before the the replacement was that?
Yeah, I went 2 years before I had it done until I ended up on a crutches.
So what did you do in terms of training in that time? I know it was after you retired.
Well, you see what Stan Efferding has to do now, how his stance used to be wider.
Yeah.
My stance got closer and closer and closer and closer. And that's what happens because there's less – his hips are moving less, but his knees are moving more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what happens. And then there comes a point where you can't – you won't be able to put your foot down all the way down. You'll be on your toe because you can't put all the pressure on there. And then it's time to get it done. And I waited way too long, but you know, because I was tough and brave. And
yeah, I think 1 year you were at the Olympia, I think maybe with a cane. Was that?
That was a crutch, yeah.
Was that a crutch. Was that before?
That was right before I had it done. That was in September. I had it done in November. Right.
I think that's when Espen said, you know what? You go on a normal.
Yeah, our buddy Espen that you've met, Mark.
Yeah.
He set it all up for me over there. So it was it was perfect. It was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah, and they're kind of ahead of the game when it comes to some of that stuff, right?
Yeah, our FDA doesn't allow stuff for 6 or more years,
right?
Sometimes even more than that, you know, before they allow certain things. And I was doing a split squat on the bad side, you know, less than 3 weeks after surgery.
Wow!
And the pain was at like a 9 or a 10 before your surgery.
It was before surgery. It was about a 20.
Right. Okay.
And then the surgeon right before they put me under, he said, "You will soon forget about all the pain you are in."
And bam, then that's that. How are you doing now?
Fine. I can squat, deadlift, do anything I want. I do a little bit of fighting. I can even do some ground fighting. I don't have any pain.
Show me on mic.
Okay.
You said you squatted 660.
Yesterday. Yeah, with no equipment. No, I wanted to even do it without knee sleeves to see what it felt like again. And, it ached a little bit.
Yeah.
But no belt, no nothing, and just wanted to see it. And it wasn't too bad. I think I could get up back up to 700 like that.
Do you believe him, Hagen?
Oh, yeah, he came home with a straw, too. Oh, yeah.
He thought he was tough again.
Oh, yeah.
Not a boner.
Yeah, of course.
Semi-annual, but, you know.
He came home like Elvis, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Hound-dogging it again.
Yeah.
What else you got going on? You have your website.
Yeah,
we
closed it down,
that.
But we're revamping it, and we're going to start it off again and have a whole bunch of new stuff on there. And
you have a seminar at Derek Kendall's, Derek Poundstone's place coming up.
Yeah, and then one in Omaha, Nebraska, at the end of the month. And
Try to lift some of that strongman shit up at
Poundstone's
place, man.
I got hurt enough doing powerlifting.
Everything is so heavy there. Like he's got like some things that are set up at like 700 pounds.
Well,
like,
look at him.
I know. He's
he could do that.
That's yeah, he's point. An animal.
Not me.
He's an animal. Did you ever do any strongman stuff?
No.
What about like when you travel overseas? You ever get like in competitions with any of the guys? They egg you on to do any
random
farmer walk and shit like that?
No, they egged me on last year, so I tripled 688 in the squat raw.
Goes down in Australia, yeah?
Yeah, that was just for kind of fun.
Who are some of your good friends when you travel overseas? I know you guys hang around some legends in the strength game.
Well, I mean, the Russians, Milanachev and Kokliev and... KK was a really nice to meet.
Who did I go eat with you guys that one time when we were in Columbus?
Sven Carlson.
Yeah, Sven Carlson. Yeah.
She grew up with Sven. She knew Sven when he was a kid.
He's my buddy.
Yeah, I think he was saying something about how he would invite people over to his place, but then they would stay way too long. He was talking about like people would stay 2-3 weeks at a time. He's like, come on, time to get the hell
out
of
here. That's when they'd wake up in a drunken stupor 3 weeks later. And Sven would still be there playing the guitar.
Playing the guitar, making up songs.
He would drink a bottle of whiskey and play the guitar and make up his own words to songs that fit in perfectly. It was hilarious. But
that sounds amazing.
Yeah, but I'm fortunate where I met some really cool people. I lifted it in a good era. We still see Kaz here and there. Sometimes Larry Pacifico at the, you know, Vince Anello's still around. Well, so Ernie France is like 85 years old.
Yeah.
He's kind of in your area, yeah?
Yeah.
Somewhere he's in Chicago. He's not that far. Where's Kaz at and what's he doing?
He's in Alaska, I believe.
Really?
Wrestling bears?
Yeah. Killing whales?
He likes to be off the grid kind of guy.
Yeah. That's cool. Has powerlifting done anything that like unexpected for you, like in terms of the different people you've met? And
well, it made me famous, which is something I would never be able to do anywhere else.
Yeah, because you were so quiet and shy and stuff.
Yeah, I can only be me,
right.
So I'm fortunate where I had good enough parents that raised me. Like, you know, you're just you. Just do it. You know, I can't do what you do.
Right.
I can't do what Jim does. I could, well, everything I could do way better than
pretty mediocre over here.
Yeah, Silent Mike.
You know, she's a pediatric cancer nurse. I can't do what she does. So everyone has their talent. Just this is just what I'm good at. When I'm on the platform and I lifted a lot of weight, now I'm a power lifter and that's my
Your element.
That's my that's my element. I know what I'm talking about when you come to lifting. Right. After that, you know, when I need nutritional advice, I ask Stan.
Right. Did nutrition play a bigger part as you got older in the sport?
But we didn't know it back then how much of a, you know, if we knew back then, I think my numbers would have been better.
Do you think some of the guys were doing some things nutritionally, like Kazmaier and those guys? I mean, Kazmaier was huge and jacked, or do you think he was just huge and jacked anyway?
I think he was just huge and jacked.
Didn't matter. Eating everything?
Yeah.
What do you see powerlifting going? I know we talked about, you know, federations being a little split and
closer
gear
to
and
the
stuff.
More of the raw with knee wraps.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of different feds, but it's becoming more popular in general, yeah?
Well, like I said, I was in Australia. The GPC Nationals they just had in Australia had 300-something lifters this week.
That's nuts.
Just last weekend. And that's all raw with knee wraps pretty much.
Yeah.
So I think that's more standard. And, I mean, the knee wraps allow people to feel better about their knees and lift a little more weight. And as long as judging's fine, no one really cares.
Yeah.
What do you think? You know, there's a few, you know, some 1,000-pound squats going on now. You got some guys benching over 700. What do you think? Kind of, you have any idea what the upper limit might be? You think someone can get to 1,100?
With knee wraps, yeah. You'll have some monster that comes out of the woods and does it.
Is it Milan or someone?
I don't think he even knows what he could do.
Yeah, he's pretty nuts.
I think if you loaded the bar with it and told him it was 950, he'd do it for a triple and just laugh.
Yeah, right. Same with his deadlift. He just blows everything up.
Yeah. Definitely there'll be an 800-pound bencher, and he'll be some freak monster.
Yeah. Yeah, look at Kirill. I mean, he's, you know,
he's a giant monster baby boy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he is. He's still young, and he's freaking enormous. Who knows what the upper limit
is. Yeah, he hasn't even filled out.
Right.
I think we may have more different training approaches now than we've ever had at one time before. Like, what do you think? Is there a difference, really, for people during – you know, between them, should they be
the only difference?
People
is
about
you,
it, worried about it. Or?
I don't believe in going too heavy too often. I think that's going to put an end to your career. And even like the older Russian Olympic weightlifters used to say that there's, you only got so many max attempts in your body over a lifetime. Don't use them up.
Yeah, right.
Save them. So you know, a lot of people they do variations of different routines, which is what I teach my guys. Like, I train this young kid, Christos. You see him from Australia.
I haven't seen him.
In training, he pulled 700 pounds, weighing a little over 148.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
yeah,
he screwed up at the meet, but he's pulled like 670 or something at 148, and he's like 21 years old. Jeez. And so he did my routine, and I taught him the numbers, how to pick your numbers, over a period of time that built him. But then all of a sudden, he throws in front squats that they help him. Mm. Then all of a sudden, he throws in something else. So you take different – it takes you in a different course where you start finding your own way, which is what you're supposed to do. So as long as you pick your numbers right and don't become a follower, you'll learn your way and you'll develop your own style. That's why there's so many different routines. They're all based off other routines. That's so how
maybe,
I learned.
You maybe kind of start out with something basic and then start to find your own
That's
way.
That's the best way.
Find
That's
the things
best
that
way.
Work well for you.
Add in a few bodybuilding movements and then learn how to try to start doing your own programming. Right. And you'll figure out your own way. But sometimes you have to make a few mistakes in order to learn how to do it right.
Ultimately, you have to coach yourself.
You do. Someone else, I had my training partners knew me like, I mean, the back of their hand. So they would help coach me as I went along. But I was the one who would write up the routine, write up my numbers. But they would help me along the way.
In terms of maxing out, you know, what do you think about max? Like you said, you only have so many maxes in your pocket, basically. Only so many maxes in your career. What do you think about maxing out in the gym?
I don't think in the off season, if it's off, like I would do like high bar close stand squats in the off season because I was so hip and back dominant that I would try to get my quads stronger.
So that would be a lift that you would lift a lot less weight in though.
Yeah, correct? But I would still cycle it like I was going to go into a meet to get stronger. Right. So I would go up to doubles.
Right.
Sometimes I do a single, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's a max.
You're not getting all fired up and blowing your load.
No, I mean, I would still get fired
blowing
up.
Blowing your load. I mean, we have a woman on the show. I mean, how offended are you right now?
I'm very offended.
With a name like Silent Mike, you think you just shut up once in a while.
That you was, wouldn't be the first person that was ever called for.
No, you still get fired up in all your training.
It was totally uncalled for.
You have to get fired up in your training because you want it bad enough. If you don't get fired up, you really don't want it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not training hard enough. And like, you know, who is it? I think Dave Tate said, he goes, you know, I can't go in the gym and work out. I have to train.
Right.
It's so hard. That's why we have to set new goals.
Yeah.
Like you're on a diet right now.
Yeah.
Because you want to get in shape, but that entails hard-ass training too.
Yeah.
So it's a different type, but you have to go in there and train hard. You can't just go in there and I'll just get right. a pump today. I'll just
and your intent has to change. You know, yeah. Nothing really happens without like the intention behind it.
Yeah, there has to, you have to be. We're all goal oriented because we're athletes.
Right.
You can't just go in there and, you know, I don't need abs that bad. I don't need to see them that bad. I still want to feel strong. I want to look strong.
Did you ever miss lifts in the gym? I mean, not in the very early going, but as you got older, when you got into like your prime.
No.
So you never really took it to 110%. You were always
saved
probably,
it for the meet.
You're always probably in the 95, 98%.
Yeah, you
range.
Can. Yeah, I think you can only go above 90% for so many weeks. Before
was that on all
you.
Three lifts? You feel or
yeah?
You had it dialed in pretty good on all three of them.
Yeah.
You said you do heavy sets of 5 threes, whatever the number may be. Is that number all five kind of look the same? Yeah, and they're all kind of fast. Or will the last two out of a set of five be a little bit grindy?
The first week will definitely be easier than the third or fourth week. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there has to be enough, you know, tension, strain, effort put into it.
Yeah.
In order to get that result.
So you train a little bit of a grind here and there.
That stimulus has to be there in order to make your body adapt to it.
Yeah.
In terms of doing repetitions, do you, you know, with a deadlift, some people do a touch and go style. Some people stop and they start again. Same thing with the squat. Some people will kind of breathe in between each one, and sometimes people will lock their benches all the way out. You have a preference on any of that?
On the bench, I didn't quite lock them out all the way for reps. On the squat, lock out, take a breath, go down again. I wouldn't take much time.
Almost an individual rep kind of deal.
Yeah, and in a deadlift, I stop and go, but my stop, I don't relax. Take a big breath, and then get going again. I stay super tight. When I touch and stop, I stay tight and keep all that tension on there to stimulate.
So it's almost
tight.
Like, you know, if you have a lot of weight on the bar, you're letting the bend of the bar maybe out of the bar just a tiny bit
yes.
at the bottom, and then coming back up. You're not bouncing it off the floor.
Yeah, because then I could teach my body how to get and stay tight. Where if I relaxed and then got ready again, I'm almost asking for trouble, asking to get loose asking to get in a different position.
Everyone always talks about trying to get tight for a lift. What do you think are some cues that could really help people? Because, like, I think a lot of the newer people don't even have a great idea of, like, what that means, like, to how tight you need to get for a 1,000-something-pound squat, you know?
When you watch me set up, if you watch my videos, when I get underneath the bar, I will actually pull the bar into my body. So I kind of wiggle and squeeze it into my body, and then my back locks up.
Right.
What I tried to do is take every muscle from...
Yeah, it looks like you're dancing a little bit.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's like Elvis.
Cullen Shuffle.
Yeah, you got the hips going.
I would
is that a turn-on?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey now. And the singlet.
Yes. Oh.
What about those old shorts from the early 90s, huh? You miss those days, Haga?
Oh, I do.
She wears them.
But we saved the shorts, though.
On her head.
Yeah. So I would try to take every muscle from my neck to my lower back and squeeze it into my spine, because that would lock you up. So even if you lean a little bit, the flatness of your back stays the same. There's no roundness at any point.
Right. No limpness.
All. Yeah, because you
can't be limp while you squat.
So you have you have to have something to push off of.
You want to get hard.
You have to have something to push off of. You understand? You have to have something to push off
right,
of.
Right, right.
If that platform that the bar sits on breaks in any way, shape, or form, you can't push off it the way you want to. And that has a chain reaction all the way down.
Your deadlift setup is my favorite of anybody's deadlift setup ever. Because a lot of people couldn't do it, but a lot of people couldn't develop that tightness at the bottom.
I don't think most people have the patience to
We were just going through that earlier, and actually I taught Chris Duffin that. That was one of his problems, is it was just a tiny little switch that he was like, holy crap. This feels so much different.
Right.
And then he naturally, Chris is crazy.
Yeah.
So he tries to throw on like 900 pounds of traps and do it because it felt so good.
Right. What do you think about people yanking on the bar? Like, you see a lot of on YouTube, and some people are successful hitting some pretty big weights. What are your opinions on that?
I think that if you can maintain your tightness and your back doesn't cave over.
Right.
But if it does, even though it's a lot of weight, you'd lever more if you were tighter.
Right, and then longevity would play into it too. Like if you're yanking on the bar all those times and you're caving over,
sooner or later
something's going to snap.
That micro trauma turns into something worse.
Right, something's going to go. Anybody have any other questions for him?
Do we have any internet questions that we didn't get to that were any worth anything?
No, I just asked to put that up just to say that we were podcasting with them. I didn't actually want those people's input.
We didn't really ask much about the bench press. So what are maybe two or three keys you think for people to increase their bench press? What are some assistance movements and what are some of the things they can work on the bench press?
Well, it almost like all the other lifts, but the bench is more because there's so many other little muscles involved.
Yeah.
You're only as strong as your weakest link.
Right.
Everything has to be strong. If the shoulders are weak, there's going to be a breakdown, you know, three quarters of the way up. If your triceps are weak, a little bit higher up than that. If your chest is weak, and that even has to do with your upper chest, outer chest, lower chest, if you won't be able to explode like you see a lot of the guys on the internet, it won't come off your chest.
Right.
And then at the same time, it's like technique. Watch the guys who bench the most and see what their technique looks like and try to emulate it. You'll have a few different styles and you'll find one that feels the best for you. And then the grip is completely subjective too, because Kaz, 661 raw, and he had a closer grip and he was 6'3". But that's what worked for him. That's what he felt, you know, where he could push the best. I used to bench better with a closer grip at one time.
Yeah, Spoto kind of pointed out that he didn't think your grip had really anything to do with your height.
He said a little bit of your arch.
Yeah, he said he thought it had more to do with your arch.
I didn't really have an arch. Yeah. So more flat back was better for a closer grip and more tricep power.
Yeah, Spoto said the same thing.
Were you guys talking about kind of
what
retracting?
What does he know about benching?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's a pussy. Were you guys kind of talking about retracting the shoulder blades and keeping the shoulders locked in and all that stuff?
Yeah, people say, do this, 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 and this. If you do one thing like retract your shoulder blades, like I think Blaine.
Right.
Blaine said, he goes, if you take your right shoulder blade and stick it in your left pocket and your left one and stick it in your right pocket, mm-hmm. that keeps your sternum up.
Right.
Right.
So not only does it lock your shoulder blades in, it keeps your sternum up, locks your back in place, keeps your shoulders back, so everything stays in perfect line. So it has a domino effect and affects so many things. Just
a little
just
bit more stability.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's all you want. It'll take a little heat off your shoulders.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you used to do a lot of overhead pressing and stuff too, behind
the
neck.
More seated behind the necks was my favorite.
Brutal. How much weight could you use on that?
I went up to 400 before.
That's nuts.
But see,
there's video footage of that, by the way.
Yes. The problem with behind the necks people have is they start too heavy. They're not in condition to do the weights that they want to start at. So you got to if your shoulders aren't used to going in that position. Yeah. Start off with a 25, a 95 pounds on each side and do it for 20 till you start getting your mobility back in your shoulders.
Is there anything you did in your training to help you get into better positions for the three lifts?
Just doing the exercises, right?
Doing the exercises. What about reps? What about something like a stiff leg deadlift, bent over row? Do you think they helped you maintain position on some of the deadlifts and squats, stuff like that?
Well, if they help correct a weak point, then it's going to maintain a better position because there won't be that break point in that weak point. That weak point will get stronger every time, so that the breakdown in form will be later and later and later.
When you were going into a contest, did the percentage of assistance work increase or decrease?
It stayed the same.
It was always the same.
I always loved bent rows. I always loved behind the necks. I would do bent laterals. I would do push downs and chin ups and pause squats and leg extensions and leg curls and you know, inclines and close grips. I did all that stuff.
What about some cardio or conditioning? Was that
I just worked out faster and did those reps at the beginning of the training cycle.
Get your heart pumping a little bit.
You can only be in a certain amount of shape or flexibility wise too for the sport that you're in.
Yeah. Right. You're not a gymnast. You're not a
So I was in good enough shape to do what I did.
Yeah.
And that's it.
So some fat guys maybe should go for a walk, but if you're working out hard enough, maybe you don't.
Yeah, you have to be in good enough shape to be able to do a quality enough workout to be able to get through it.
He's talking to you, Mark.
Yeah, I know. I kind of feel that too. He's kind of talking right at me, isn't he?
Through you. I know there's nothing there.
Yeah, there's not much going on.
So one internet question I saw that did have some value. If not powerlifting, what would you have done?
I would have been a physical therapist.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
He fixed my shoulder before we came in here.
Punched it.
As Hege points out, therapist, if you cut it, it's the rapist. Rapist.
The rapist. The rapist.
That's perfect.
You see that when you try to learn English.
The
rapist.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not going to that. That person's supposed to help me?
Language
barrier.
Fuck that.
Yeah. God damn.
Ed the rapist cone.
Mm-hmm. I think he would do. He would have done good in Olympic lifting too. I think.
Yeah, I would have liked. I did one snatch once. I did a power snatch at 286.
Damn, that's pretty good.
I just loaded it up and did it.
And then some
traps were sore for like 4 days.
You did a 901 sumo deadlift, 220, 887 deadlift, also what a 242 conventional.
Yeah.
And what are some of the other numbers?
220 in the squat, I did a 964. I benched 545 raw in a full meet at 220.
Raw.
Two-hour weigh-ins.
Is that the same as you, Smelly? What did you get at 242?
Yeah, about the same. I did 551.
I was 220.
Yeah. Oh, he was 242.
Yeah, I was too fat.
And he didn't squat and deadlift even half of what you did.
Yeah, but he's like 5 inches taller than me.
Yeah. Half the good looks, half the brains, though.
I don't know about that. He does have a pretty damn good company.
You did a 1,019 squat. Is that your best squat?
Yeah. That's the one I count. I did a 1038 in the WPO at the Hard Rock Cafe with Kidder.
Cheating motherfucker.
And actually, that beat Brett Mikesell at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Goggins did 1036 right before that to have the highest squat ever, regardless of weight class.
Wait, highest squat ever? That's rude, Ed.
And then Doug Furness said, put 2 more pounds on and let Eddie go. And I was at 242. Goggins was at 275. So then I came out and did it. I walked it out of the mono, though. And I knew I cut it an inch.
Yeah.
So I don't count that one. Even though it passed, I don't count it.
That was pretty cool when Goggins did that good morning with 1102. Remember that? That was crazy.
He had an extremely strong back.
That was a crazy.
And actually, he just had his hip done, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but he's still strong as hell.
Yeah, I think he was still squatting around 800 pounds.
Like deadlifting. He was deadlifting.
Yeah, a year or two ago or something. That's nuts. And then what about your best single ply squat, 220? What'd you do?
964.
Oh, raw. What's 925 for a double in training?
Yeah, went in a little over 230.
And you did,
walked out.
You did a 901 for a double, or 900 for a double in training?
Yeah, at 220 in a deadlift.
And then you benched 565?
565, pause, yeah.
So if you do the math on that, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm a nerd, I already did it, it's 2391. But if you were to squat a little bit more, get a little change somewhere else, you'd be over 2,400 pounds.
I squatted 865 with just a belt on, walked out with no sleeves before. Damn. Pretty easy.
That's crazy. Where's your strength at nowadays? You said you did a 660 squat the other day. You have trouble bench pressing, you mentioned, because your shoulders.
Yeah, I'm gonna get them worked on. So, I wouldn't mind actually get in shape if I could. There's always the if in there.
Right.
I wouldn't mind coming back and doing like an 800 walked out, no knee wrap squat. With the slingshot knee sleeves, of course.
Yeah, there you go.
And wrist wraps. A bench a high 4 again and pull a little over 8.
Wow.
And
where do you think your deadlift's at now?
I don't know. I was kind of having problems with my lower back before, but I started deadlifting again. I'm going to deadlift with you guys tomorrow, and I'll go up to whatever Mike goes up to, maybe 6 1/4.
All right. 9 1/2. Nine and a half it is.
But I'm not wearing a belt.
All right, me neither.
What do you think about all this, Hege? You think he's out of his mind?
Whatever.
She knows
makes him
I'm
happy,
out of my mind.
Whatever makes him happy.
You're all for
Eddie's
it.
If he's happy, the rest of us are happy.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what my mom said?
I don't know. Yeah, I think so, probably.
When she sends the check every month.
Yeah.
When she sends me the check for dating her.
So those of you that don't know and you can't that aren't watching the podcast on the video, Ed is in a wheelchair nowadays, and Hege is his keeper, and she pushes him around.
Mm-hmm. Wipes the drool off his face.
I love pushing him around. Yeah.
He has a lot of drool on him. For those
she
of you that
blends all my food for me so I can drink it.
Yeah, poor little Eddie.
Because he lost all his teeth.
Yeah. All that crack he's smoking all these years.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helped.
To make weight.
All right, guys. Well, it was great having you on the show. And those of you that are interested in following what Ed Cohen is doing, check him out. He's on Facebook. I don't know if he's anywhere else. He just punched Silent Mike in the face.
I wasn't even quick enough.
Well, I heard that was a tradition now. So
yeah, I've been punched by every guest lately. Probably the last 4 guests have been
punched. Pretty much. Strengthinc.com will be back up and running in a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to be at Derek Poundstone's place at the first weekend in June. And then what's the other event you're doing?
Ireland?
towards the end of the month, it'll be Omaha, Nebraska. Cool. Omaha Barbell.
Very cool. You know, those of you that are listening, you definitely want to check out, you know, the different information that Ed has. We're going to shoot a bunch of videos with him here. He just has information that is going to be really useful for you. It's going to be something you're going to be able to adapt to and utilize right away in your training. So definitely check it all out. Multiply your hustle, multiply your muscle, and may all your shits be tapered. I'm at Mark Smelly Bell on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at Silent Mike with 2 Ks.
I'm Jim McD, STTV, everywhere that I would want you to find me. Follow the show on Instagram, at Mark Bell's Powercast, Twitter, at STJimSack, Facebook.com/SupertrainingJim, and we're out.
Thank you, guys.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Awesome.
Subscribe to Power Magazine at thepowermagazine.com. If you choose the digital edition, you can catch up on all the great back issues, take your training to the next level with Slingshot products, HowMuchYouBench.net, and look for BSN products including NO Explode at bodybuilding.com. Mark Bell's Powercast is a production of supertraining.tv.